Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln. It is March 28th, and we are just on the eve of the LO compensation rules. We're going to be talking about that. We have back with us again this week Glenn Corso, which will be going into depth. In fact, Glenn has got an important announcement and an update, some new a news flash for us, and we're going to get into that when we get into that segment. And after we cover our normal information, but there's always the thing that's at the top of the hour is, at the top of the news is interest rates, and we covered at the top of the hour. Joe Farr, good to have you with us again. What is going on in the world of interest rates?
Well, I'm going to be quick about this because we need to get to that news. But you know, today, mortgage rates are about where they ended today, Friday, but opened a little lower, about 4 or 5 thirty-seconds down. And so we've seen enough of an improvement where some people are going to be looking at favorable price changes if you haven't already seen them. So moving in the right direction anyway. This morning, some personal income came out. Pretty much was all the economic events that were announced today were pretty much as expected, other than pending home sales, which rose nicely, especially following last week's very miserable new and existing home sales. So we'll see how that translates. But up one today, and some improvement has occurred already. So it's a good movement anyway.
Let's talk about last week. Fairly quiet week.
Yeah, it was. You know, we've had so much stuff going on that it was kind of nice to have a week without huge economic and/or world events moving mortgage rates. Now, we did have something a little unusual Monday of last week that was not good for mortgage rates, and were it not for that movement, we would have been just about flat for the week. But last Monday, the Treasury announced that they were going to begin to sell their $142 billion portfolio of mortgage-backed securities, agency mortgage-backed securities. And, you know, they acquired those very early on in late 2008 when things were really starting to hit the fan, so to speak. And when Fannie and Freddie were put in conservatorship, they bought some mortgage-backed securities to help support the market. And so they're now selling those, $10 billion a month, they said. You know, it's a big number, $142 billion. And, you know, that was enough for the market to say, you know, there's going to be additional supply out there, which means prices will conceivably go down and yields will go up. This is nothing compared to what's going to happen when the Fed finally makes that decision to start selling their $944 billion mortgage-backed security portfolio. So, you know, it was big news on Monday. Last week, everything really was, as I said, kind of quiet. Not much activity on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. Mortgage rates fell a little bit on Friday as one of the Fed governors came out saying that the Fed was going to need to begin to tighten monetary policy in the not-too-distant future. So, you know, any time the Fed well, this is one of the more hawkish Fed members, and so it wasn't too big a surprise, but you know, everyone knows it's going to happen sometime. He's saying in the not too distant future.
Well, as I mentioned, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, as I mentioned earlier, new and existing home sales last week were really weak, and especially new home sales, which fell 17% from January to an all-time low. So the ending home sales number today was nice, having seen such poor numbers last week.
Yeah, and then other than the fact that we got LO comp coming up on Friday of this week and being started, and unless there's some announcements coming forward. But what else is going to be happening this week in the world of interest rates, Joe?
Well, Friday's jobs report is going to be huge, as always. 185,000 jobs expected. That's up a little bit from the end of last week already, and projecting the unemployment rate to stay the same at 8.9%. Also on Friday is going to be the Institute of Supply Management Index. It will come out. That's a pretty significant event for the manufacturing side of things. And manufacturing's been typically been beating forecasts. So Friday's a big day. We have a Treasury auction going on right now. 2 years of more importance to the mortgage industry, the 5 and 7 year Treasury notes are going to be auctioned tomorrow and Wednesday.
Well, that is significant. I was chuckling because the jobs report is on Friday. We got a little comp coming out on Friday, which could impact a few jobs here in the mortgage industry. So that's why I was chuckling in the background as you mentioned the fact that jobs report's coming out on Friday.
We'll see how real time that number is, huh?
I know it's not that real time, but anyway, we'll find out. Folks, you're just going to want to stay tuned to the rest of the program. We got some really important stuff, and Glenn Corso is on as our guest. We're talking about LO compensation, and by the looks of all the people that are dialed into this call, and then hundreds, if not thousands more, in via live, dialed in through the website, we're so grateful to have you here, and you're going to stay all the way through. Stay tuned all the way through. And also remember, Alice Alvey's coming up next after this brief break, with the update about what's going on the traffic report, the legislative report. We'll be right back after we
economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. And it seems like it's conference season. And we have Alice Alvey out in Florida, Hollywood, Florida, at the Fraud and Tech Conference. It's two MBA conferences that are being run simultaneously. Are they back-to-back, Alice? You have to give us an update on that. But anyway, so you're down in sunny Florida, which has got to be a wonderful break from that that cold tundra, that tough winter you've been enjoying, in parentheses, up there in Detroit. But good to have you on the program. Appreciate you dialing in while being at the conference. Give us a quick update. Now, are the two conferences running back-to-back, Alice?
Yeah, they are being held together, so it's the same exhibit hall and attendees somewhere between, you know, 800-900 attendees, according to someone I talked to at MBA. So good turnout, good people, and as you mentioned, lots to talk about, especially on the fraud side. So,
yeah, no kidding. With all that's going on there, fraud up and all of the reports as we've heard. But let's get into LO licensing, the applications. Dodd-Frank, give us an update here, Alice.
Well, yeah, we're going to have Glenn on the show coming up in a little bit to spend some time really diving into more issues that we're finding from the Fed. But what I want to let you know now is Friday is the day, as of what we know, as of this minute, Friday is the day that technically applications taken that day will have to fall under the new compensation plan. So I hope you're all ready, and we'll be talking about that later. Also, this week, we are expecting from the FDIC that we get another floated idea out there about what is a qualified residential mortgage that would be exempt from risk retention under Dodd-Frank. So we're looking to get some better guidance this week. Some comments made by Sheila Bair in particular over the last couple of weeks, you know, she keeps thinking that this is just going to affect big companies, that the whole idea behind QRM is about really trying to have an impact on the big companies, big banks that, you know, we're really a part of, in her eyes, her statements, the root of this challenge that we're facing, that we faced in the industry and in the economy with housing. And trying not to hurt community banks was another comment that I found that she had made reference to. So We're hoping they come out with a little common sense. Some people have said they caught wind of that maybe Fannie Freddie loans would be exempt from the 5% risk retention, but really nobody knows until we see the plan this week, so we'll definitely make sure next week we spend plenty of time talking about that. So risk retention, watch your news bulletins. Sure, we'll be getting more about that this week. Secondly, appraiser independence goes into effect April 1st. So for those of you who have felt like, wow, you know, I got that under control, I don't really have to worry too much about it, good. Yes, if you were HBCC compliant, you'd be fine. But for community banks and credit unions, and a lot of companies are going, hey, I want to manage my own appraiser list. Can that still happen under appraiser independence? You know, you can search the reg all day long, and it doesn't use the word rotate. It doesn't say you have to use an AMC. And I'm going to just stress with folks, as you look for technology solutions to solve appraiser independence, don't lose sight of you still need to hire a quality appraiser who knows what they're doing. So I'm just going to leave you with that message on appraiser independence. As far as proposed rules, I do want you to be aware that under ECOA, there is a proposed rule you need to be aware of. The comment period is open until April 14th. We have a little window here that under this act, it is going to change an adverse action notice. So you know that statement of denial, termination, or change that you send out when the borrower doesn't get approved. They're looking at changing the format of that letter, some slight changes as to when it has to be rolled out. So for those of you on the form side of the company and procedure side, take a look at that rule. We'll talk more about that also in future shows as we get a chance to dive into some of the consequences of that new form. Also a heads up, keep in mind, May 20th is the date for the current mortgagees must be at that, the heads up on the net worth date for FHA essentially is that May 20th, 2011. If you didn't meet those standards back at the beginning of the year for loan correspondence, just want you to be aware that anybody who is due to renew, the $1 million goes into effect coming up here in another month or so. And a couple of bills we are watching. We're watching for what's going to happen with the home affordable modification programs that are out there. There are a couple of bills. One's already passed the House that would put an end to the HAMP programs. And then last but not least, it does look like the U.S. Patriot Act will get renewed. Those bills to get that renewed, because it's due to sunset again this year, bills are already out there to get that renewed. So Patriot Act looks like it, too, is going to stay on the table for us next year. Anyway, that's my traffic report for today. Dave, I'll take it back to you.
The legislative traffic report, it just seems to never end. There's rush hour in most cities, but it just seems like it's a 24-hour rush hour with this administration running through and putting so many regulations out there. Folks, I'm looking at Alice's notes. She sent, if you could see all the bills that she is tracking, you don't want to miss another program. This is a great place to stay up on what is going on. We appreciate you listening in and being a part of the program. Tell your friends about it. Again, you can go to listen. For those of you that are dialing in to listen via the phone, you can go to www.lickinonlending.com. You can also log in and listen to it streaming. We appreciate you being a part of this program and passing the word around, getting the word out. And Alice, we want to say thank you for your contribution. It's so significant because, after all, it gets any traction after you report it. So I don't know if that's a good thing or not. But anyway, good to have you on the program, and I hope you enjoy the conference. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Profit Doctor talking about how to fix that bottom line and everything that ails you at that area. Be right back after this break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, and each and every week we have the Profit Doctor, also known as Andy Schell, This is an individual that just is in the CPA, CMB, and a lot of other letters behind his name. This is someone who also teaches CPAs continuing education on the audits, how to audit more independent mortgage banking companies. So, folks, you're talking, we're hearing from the guy that teaches CPAs on how to audit mortgage companies. So, Andy, so good to have you on the program. Also thrilled to be in partnership with you on this and everything else we're doing. By the way, everybody, if you should go out, if you haven't seen it, look at the latest version or the latest publication, the MBA magazine. Andy and I just published an article about the future of mortgage banking. Get a copy, read it. We're getting a lot of really great feedback. And, Andy, let's get into what's the Profit Doctor got to say for us today.
Well, thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's certainly an honor to be in partnership with you and our company. Today, the Profit Doctor is on Find the Yes. Find the Yes. You probably never worked with an accountant that most accountants don't like to say yes, and we'll talk a little bit about that and why. But just a second, let's look at the call report, the new call report coming up on May the 15th. I wanted to touch base on that real quick here. The new call report, the new NMLS call report's due on the 15th, and this new call report consists of two sections. We've been talking about this, and we're going to continue to talk about it to help people get prepared for this. The first section is statistical data about origination activity. Now, this statistical section is due from every office in every state, and in this report, it has to include the disposition of every application in both units and volume by received, accepted but not, approved but not accepted, denied, withdrawn, denied for incompleteness, or originated. So the question I'd ask is, does your system have this information ready to print? And do you know right now today the disposition of every application taken in your entire organization? Now, this report also includes a listing of all the loans closed by every originator in your company, along with their NMLS ID for all the activity from January through March the 31st and due on May the 15th. So if I were you right now, I'd get on my computer and I'd type a quick email over to my CFO or my head of IT or my head of operations or whoever it is that manages data and manages application information, and I'd ask them to get me a report by tomorrow that shows the disposition of every application from every branch for every LO for January and February. And on this report, I don't want to just see if it was denied or approved, but I want to see everything that was received, approved but not accepted, denied, withdrawn, denied for incompleteness, and originated. And now if you think about this, the total of all those approved plus all those denied should equal the total received. So the whole report should flow together. So I go ahead and get that report, get started at it, start thinking about it. Now, the other section is financial data, and it's going to be due quarterly for every mortgage company that the agency or Ginnie Mae approved. For the non-agency approved mortgage banks, the mortgage lenders that don't have Fannie Freddie Ginnie approval, that segment, that financial segment information is due just annually. Now, if you have questions about this report, the NMLS has a website, mortgage.nationwidelicensingsystem.org. There you can find more information about this report. Don't be surprised. This is possible. It's possible to get all this information gathered. Just start now, and I'd start by sending that email out like I suggested. Now, on to accounting and getting yes from accounting. If you think about the role of accounting, most may think that the role of accounting is to count the cash, keep the books, get accurate data. Some may think take out the trash. So that's the most thing, that's the role of accounting, but let's look at the really key role. The key role of accounting is to generate financial statements, and that would include getting really good key performance indicators, and not just creating good key performance indicators, but also explaining them, explain all of the KPIs so that management really understands what's happening in the organization and what needs to be done to improve the profits. Because the next thing, really what the CFO needs to do, what accounting needs to do, is we need to be finding the profits, assessing opportunities, applying an ROI assessment, and then create decision tools so that management is able to make informed decisions based on the pros and the cons of any path, applying an ROI so that we're able to find the profits, because if we can find a way to get to yes, given all of the options and given ROI, then that leads to profit. If all we do is say no, then we'll stay stagnant. And we can't just stay stagnant. We need to be moving. But we need to be moving in the right direction. So we need to be able to find the yes that drives the ROI. And many accountants are wired black and white. I mean, there's no denying that. Many accountants are wired to be yes or no. And oftentimes when it comes to financial matters, they'll say no. The CFO should not just say yo, no. The CFO should find a path to yes. So in my opinion, the CFO's job is to find a way to get to an ROI-based yes, and that includes creating a collaborative environment with all the staff and all the managers where everybody's working together to make the company better, to find success. Let's not find blame. Let's not try to find the other things wrong with the other departments. Let's fix it. Let's work together and find success. So in my opinion, Dave, the CFO needs to look for the KPIs, assess the options, and then help management make informed decisions that get the organization moving forward to yes. So that's
get them to yes. That's a great place. I mean, you're right. So many CFOs just have been they get the reputation of saying no. I don't think that's actually fair all the time, but the reality is we do hear them say no because too many in the organization are saying yes, but without the facts. So it puts the CFO in a tough spot, so he's forced to be saying no. So if they would get the good KPIs, be looking at them in a meaningful way, it'd be just so significant. Folks, I tell you, we get so fortunate to have Andy Schell on the program bringing us this kind of information. We are going to be doing, Andy and I are going to be doing another Campus MBA webinar starting April 19th. The last one we did was an overwhelming success. Three times the number of people that they anticipated attending were there on that webinar. We received a lot of feedback. If you're not a part of it, if you've always had accounting be a mystery to you as it relates to loan accounting, anything that's mortgage, lending, accounting, you want to become a part of that webinar. You can buy the whole thing. You can buy pieces of it. Listen to it. It's a seven-week seminar every Tuesday it starts right at about 12:30 Central Time, so you can calculate the difference where it's at. But Andy, so good to have you be a part of the program again today. I'm going to hurry on because we do want to get Glenn Corso on, which we're going to do right after the break. Folks, stay tuned for Glenn Corso. He will be right back. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin on Lending. We're so glad to have you be a part of the program. I'm racing through this today, folks, a little bit. If you hear a little extra pace in this, is because there is some late-breaking news that we want to get to. We're very fortunate to have Glenn Corso be with us. Again, he's been with us for the last few weeks and generously giving his time, taking time away from his community mortgage banking project, which is an advocacy group, an organization representing independent mortgage bankers. It's a very successful organization. Prior to that, Glenn was the Senior Vice President of PMI Group with 33 years of experience. He's also the former legal counsel for the MBA. Great amount of depth and experience. But, boy, Glenn, are we glad to have you right where you're at right now representing independent mortgage bankers at what seems at the very crucible, the center of it all, Washington, D.C., with what's going on. Glenn, welcome to the program. Good to have you be with us. And I know you have an announcement, and all our listeners, I want to get to that as soon as possible. There's been a recent announcement about the lawsuit. So if you could get into that and give us a status of the lawsuits, we'd be sure appreciate it.
Sure, Dave. Thanks. Thanks for having me. So the news is that, as you know, two mortgage broker groups filed a lawsuit against the Federal Reserve over the LO Comp regulations. My group, the Community Mortgage Banking Project, filed a legal brief last week in support of their effort, and we just got word not more than a half an hour ago. The court has scheduled arguments on the temporary restraining order for tomorrow morning at 9:30. So what that means is that the Federal Reserve attorneys and the attorneys for the two mortgage broker groups will be arguing in federal court over whether or not the judge should issue an immediate order to stop the implementation of these regulations on April 1st. The judge could rule at the hearing, the judge could rule later in the day, or the judge could rule in the next day or two afterward on whether or not to grant that order.
That is some of the best news we could hear, and any of our listeners could hear, that there is a chance that someone is going to put the brakes on this thing and stop this insanity that seems to be going on. Well, let's go through the lawsuits. There's the two of them that have been been pending out there. What do you think was significant that moved them? Was it possibly the filing of your brief? What's so significant? Are they finally hearing from so many out there? Why do you think we finally have a hearing?
Well, I think the reason that we finally have a hearing is that the mortgage broker groups had to make a showing in court about the imminent harm that would occur to mortgage brokers if the rule were allowed to go into effect. So this isn't so much about, gee, was the rule done improperly? Did the Fed exceed its authority? But more, is there going to be imminent harm? And is there enough of a question about the way the Fed did the rule that the judge really ought to stop things in its tracks so that this imminent harm won't occur to mortgage brokers? They had
Let's
affidavits.
Talk about that imminent harm.
Okay.
Go, if you could just kind of get into what are the arguments. I think this is significant, is the what we perceive the judge viewed of all the arguments that have been put forth. What is the one that you think were the most significant in representing imminent harm?
So I think the real thing that the judge is going to be asked to focus on is the fact that the brokers were making the argument that because of the way the Federal Reserve is interpreting the borrower direct payment portion of the rule, that it really is not very useful to mortgage brokers, and as a result, they are going to and are right now seeing their loan officers being recruited away by mortgage bankers that aren't operating under that same limitation. What the brokers are arguing is, look, we have to do lender paid. The lender paid deals that we're getting aren't enough to really compensate us fully for all the expenses that we face. Meanwhile, the mortgage bankers that we compete against, the mortgage bankers can still impose doc prep fees, underwriting fees, all these various fees on borrowers. We can't do any of that. The only way we can get compensated is from the point and a half or 2 points or whatever deal we can work out with the mortgage bankers, puts us at a tremendous competitive disadvantage. So I think that's what the argument's going to hinge on.
Very good. Let's bring in our panelists, Alice, who's there at the conference. I'd love to have you in on it. Andy Schell, our profit doctor, as well as Joe Farr. Andy, I know one of the questions that you had, we were talking about on the pre-qual, is if, in fact, there's so much ambiguity and the need for frequency in which you change up the plans. Andy, if you could get into that a bit.
Yeah, David, thank you very much. And, Glenn, great to speak with you again. As I get into that question about frequency and the possibility of this lawsuit changing how things works. If I could ask you just one quick question on as a follow-up on the what the judge may find, based on what you've described so far about imminent harm to brokers, even if he agrees that that's true, do you see that there, and I understand it's just your guess, but do you think that there's any chance that if the judge says yes to the effect it has on brokers, that it would change the implementation as it affects mortgage bankers?
Well, Andy, I think it might, because to be honest with you, I think that the judge is going to be faced with an either-or situation. That is that the judge is going to have to say, look, I'm going to just halt implementation of this rule until we can sort all this stuff out. Or the judge may say, you know what, I really don't think that harm is really that bad, so I'm going to let the rule go forward. We'll be able to argue about the rule. We can still have the lawsuit, but I'm not going to issue an order stopping it in its tracks.
Okay. Well, the good news, bad news about all of this is that we have to proceed and plan as if it's going to go into effect. And so
that's for sure.
On to our questions, in spite of the fact that it might change. Glenn, one of the questions I had is that we've been hearing people talk about the frequency that they're allowed to make changes to their compensation plan, and my concern is that we're kind of like launching a pilot model of our LO comp, and we could discover after a week even that we're losing money or that we're losing our team and we need to modify our plan. And it would seem to me that the ability to change more frequently would give us more ability from a financial perspective to get this tuned up correctly. So my question is, what's the most frequent we can change this plan and still be in compliance with the law? The rule.
So, Andy, that question has come up a lot, as you can imagine. And here's what I've been telling people. As I know you're aware, and I'm sure many people listening are aware, the Fed only talked about a six-month change in their commentary. You and I both know that that's kind of silly to talk about changing things every 6 months in an industry as dynamic as the mortgage industry. So what I've been telling people is, in our discussions with the Fed staff, they've indicated two things. Number one, that it will be perfectly understandable if there are rather abrupt changes the first few weeks after the implementation of the rule. Let's say it goes forward on April 1. Obviously, if after a week or 5 days or however long a period, you see that competitively it's not working for you, then you should go ahead and change it. Because if there's a market reason or a competition reason to change, you should go ahead and do that. What I've been counseling people is you should try and set out a policy of how frequently you're going to review your plan, how frequently you're going to make changes. Try and stick to that as close as you can, whether it's every month, every 2 months, every quarter, whatever you decide to do. Try and stick with that. And then if you have to depart from that, and inevitably you'll have to, then you should just document that, because the examiners who come in, whether it's the state or the federal examiners, whoever examines you, you know that they're going to be asking you questions about that, and you have to be able to justify why you made the changes as frequently as you did, because everybody's going to be changing more often than every 6 months.
I was just going to say, isn't that the key to the whole thing? I mean, the key to the whole thing is documentation, set up your reasoning for why you're doing what you're doing, and making sure at the end of the day it's just not based on the terms and conditions as straightforward as you can find in the law.
That's exactly right, because what I've been counseling people is that in the end, as long as you're not changing so frequently that it looks like you're trying to slide around the law, you should be okay. And I agree with you on documentation, too. Very important.
Let's talk about briefly. Documentation is one of those things that means different things to different people. How would you define adequate documentation if you perceive that changes are needed in your organization or in your company's comp plan?
So what I would say is that you should write up a memo on the day that you decide to make the change. You explain in the memo why you're making the changes, and you keep a file of those memos. And if you can memorialize it in some other way, You know, if you're a large enough company that you have an outside counsel and that sort of thing, you have an exchange of emails with the counsel, any kind of paperwork documentation that you can point to, you know, a year or two down the road or whenever the examiner comes in to be able to say, look, I made a change on XYZ date. Here's what I did and here's why I did it.
And can that change really... be, my loan officer gave me notice today because they're leaving. I need to change my plan today because they're about to quit.
We had 50% of our loan officers just resign because get recruited for a more perceived a better comp plan.
Right. Yeah, I'd say those are pretty good reasons. But it's just that it's important to document it because, as you know, things look different 3 months later or 4 months later.
Well, I think to Alice's point, before we got on the pre-call, or the pre-radio program, the conference call we had, we were talking about Alice is hearing a number of people, I am too, a number of people are really starting to compare their comp plans. I mean, they're really shopping them out there. And by the way, Andrew Berman is normally a part in the background. He's being tweeted. He had a meeting. We can't have the tweets coming in. So if you want to tweet me at David Licken, Twitter me that and put in LOComp, I'll get to your questions as fast as I can to answer them here. Andrew also said that if you want to email him in confidence, the plans that are out there, he's going to find a way to get him published. His email address is Andrew at N as in National Mortgage Professional, NMPmedia.com. He's going to find a way to get it out there. He's kind of become the de facto communicator in a lot of this. But let's get – the documentation is where we were at, and we're talking about the importance of that. We're seeing that this is going to get challenged. And I think one of the things that Joe went to earlier had to do about the authority by which all of this is happening. Joe, you represent a number of people on this, and I know you've sensed the frustrations. Let's get into – some of the questions for you that from your customer base.
Well, we're seeing in the LOComp LinkedIn connections that there's just a lot of frustration out there, and I think it goes along with other areas of politics right now about things having just gone too far, and I think the broker argument is a great example of the interpretation of a rule that went too far, and the brokers are calling them on it. It kind of brings you to the question of when you are challenged on your plan, what are you going to be challenged against? Because things are so vague, and you've been given very conflicting, point banks as being a great example. At one time they're fine, now they're not. What are you going to be compared against, and how do you – maybe that makes it easier to defend yourself? What are your thoughts, Glenn?
Well, you'd think that it would make it easier to defend yourself, but here's a couple of things to think about. First, the thinking is that the same Federal Reserve staff attorneys that are giving out this advice right now that has clearly changed over time, to be charitable, I guess, will be probably transferring over to the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau when it comes into existence in July. Second, the primary enforcers for independent mortgage bankers and for brokers of this rule will be the state regulators. And I think you can guess where the state regulators are going to look to get their guidance on how to enforce the rule. Probably from those same staff attorneys that are giving out this advice and guidance right now. So while you would think that the vagueness could be a defense for you, I think unfortunately what we're going to find is that the guidance that's given to the regulators is going to be coming from the same source that's giving out the guidance that is so frustrating to the industry right now.
Yeah, when you start from what the purpose of the law is, or the purpose of the rule, and it is to protect the consumer from predatory lending practices. It's from that point that it feels like they've just gone further. It's almost to the point where it's punitive to the industry for the past practices, and I understand that. But when they're going beyond the stated intent of the rule, it just seems like they're setting up themselves to have a challenge.
Well, what's happened, and this is what's, I think, so frustrating to so many people in the industry, is that we found that as we ask questions, the Federal Reserve staff attorneys start to realize, oh, gee, we didn't think about that, like point banks, for example. Great mm-hmm. example, where clearly, if you look at the written commentary, there's no mention about point banks in there. So the more that people from the industry have asked the Federal Reserve staff about point banks, among many other subjects, the staff has started to think about it and thought, oh my gosh, you know, what about this and this and this? And before you know it, they come out with the interpretation that they came out with, which is really so damaging and so harmful to the industry. And we've seen that in a number of different areas. So what you've seen is that as the industry has asked questions, and because there's been so little written guidance out there, the more questions we ask, the more things seem to occur to the Federal Reserve staff as, quote, ways to get around the rule, and hence they stretch and strain to make interpretations to prevent or to plug what they see are potential loopholes.
But, you know, to that point, Glenn, I have to say, one of the things they keep seeming to think as a loophole is the ability to drop a price in the event that either the market changes, or let's just say just in the event that the market changes, and the ability to drop a price for the borrower, especially if I'm a broker or a loan officer, you know, what is so wrong with that? Well, they interpret, you know, that there must be a loophole in there because somebody could overquote the price and then intentionally try and drop it down. And it's just, I think it's reached, Joe, to your point, of punitive. They've lost even track of their own conversations, their own ability to defend these points in an effort to try and close every single possible loophole that might, in one rare case, if misused, be a disservice to the customer. Instead of looking at the broader picture, there's a lot of great loan officers there who would want to have the price dropped to benefit the consumer. It's gone to madness, I think. Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, Alice, I will tell you that the Federal Reserve staff has really, really objected to dropping the price and having the loan officer or the loan originator share in that price drop by reducing their compensation. They really haven't gone to the point of saying that the loan officer can't make the decision to cut the price if they feel for competitive reasons they need to do that. From a company standpoint, of course, the companies are saying, well, gee, that's all well and good, but what kind of governor do I have? What kind of way do I have from controlling my loan officers from, you know, being overly generous and cutting the price
yeah.
too much?
Right.
And hence the point bank idea. And now what we're left with is, gee, each loan officer is going to have to get a corporate decision to cut the price, or you're going to have to just trust your loan officers and fly blind, which I understand is not a very good policy for a lot of
right.
companies.
I go to that whole thing of flying blind, and then if I understand correctly, we can't go back. If they make a pricing do something that has a financial consequence, we can't go back to them and adjust in any way, shape, or form those for something that was innocent or otherwise.
Yes, you're exactly right, Dave. You can't go back. That was something that came out of the call the week before, you know, the March 17th call.
Well,
and
I think
to
it's
me, that's another example of gone too far. You know, if you've protected the consumer at the time you locked the loan, subsequent activity doesn't impact the consumer, shouldn't impact the consumer, but if it's necessary in order to put the cost or the consequence where they belong between the company and the LO, I don't know. I don't see why that would be a problem.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. For instance, if an LO makes a mistake that causes the good faith estimate to be over the 10% tolerance, and it was a mistake on their part, if you're going to hold the consumer harmless from that mistake, then I don't see why you can't go back against their compensation for part of it or all of it, if need be. Or if there's been an extension, you need a rate lock extension. The fee for that extension, if it was the issue with the LO not having, not being as efficient as they should have, again, I don't see the reason as long as the consumer is protected from it. But the staff has interpreted it otherwise.
Yeah.
It is for the questions that are beginning to roll in. Okay, so what about rate locks? I have a rate expiring. How can my company go ahead and issue that? There's no point bank system. We don't have that existing in our company. Can my company extend that out of their own decision, their own volition, so to speak?
That would be true. Yes, they can, and that would be true for something like a rate lock extension, or if you decide that you've exceeded the 10% tolerance on the GFE. Again, as it can be a charge against the company, and the company can swallow that expense, and then it's perfectly fine under the LO comp regs.
So
but
even
you put yourself.
Go ahead, Joe.
Sorry, you put yourself in the broker's shoes in that regard, and you cannot. And I
think
that's the reason. That's the reason for their lawsuit.
Yes, I'm sorry. That is correct. I was talking about when I say company, I meant the mortgage banker or the creditor. But that is correct. The broker cannot do that, and the brokerage company can't do that.
Which puts them at the disadvantage, which is maybe one of the rationales why you're saying the judge is willing to listen to this. It is going to cause for a dramatic impact on so many of the originators that work through the broker shops. Glenn, we appreciate you being on the program. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back right after this word.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track.
Those of you that have been listening for a while know that I like pictures, even those that tell stories that aren't so good. Last Wednesday, Calculated Risk had a posting called New Home Sales Fall to Record Low in February. I know this isn't news to any of you, but what I found really interesting in this story was the collection of historic graphs they included. The first graph shows new home sales versus recessions over the past 47 years. They follow that with a graph of new home months of supplies over that same period. I know graphs don't make for good radio, so I won't bother describing them. Instead, I encourage you to pop over to calculatedrisk.com and find the posting called New Home Sales Fall to Record Low in February. The good news is that with new home sales being down, the inventory of existing homes on the market should start to shrink. That's the story that caught my attention this week. For the Mortgage Minute, this is Rob Katz with EMD. I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lickin' on Lending Show or online at dmdinc.com. PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Licken, and our special guest again this week is Glenn Corso. Appreciate him so much being a part of it. Glenn Corso's the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project, which is an advocacy group and an organization representing independent mortgage bankers. And if there was ever a time that you need to be a part of an organization that is going to be an advocacy on your part, it is so important that we have you join up. That you can head over and learn more about his Community Mortgage Banking Project by going to their website. And surprisingly, it's called www.communitymortgagebankingproject.com. Go over there, learn more about it, encourage you to become a part of it. Glenn, I appreciate you so much for being a part of the program. Let's get back into some of the questions that are coming in. And I want to say to many of the you that are out there, we have 10 minutes on the program. If you want to email me or tweet me your questions, I'd be happy to get to them. We have a number of questions that are flowing in, and a lot of them go back to the rate locks. A lot of brokers are very upset, understandably so, that they're at it. It's another example, the rate lock situation, their ability to not be able to have any impact on that is going to have a huge impact. But is it true, Glenn, that the wholesaler, at their own discretion, if a broker makes a request no different than an LO, is it that different, or is that a different dynamic? Get into that a little bit. We've got a number of people that are loan officers, a part of broker shops, that are asking that question. Is it that different?
Well, it's not different in the sense that under the regulation, if you have a broker dealing with the consumer and there's going to have to be a rate lock extension and there's a fee involved, then the broker can't pay it, their company can't pay it, but they can ask the wholesaler to pay it. How that works between broker and wholesaler, though, I guess I can't say how easy a request that is to make, but that's the way it's going to have to work under the regulation.
So I don't know that any wholesalers were ever really charged for that. There were rate concessions, come to think about it. So, yeah, I guess there is a change. So at this point, no rate concessions, no fees can be exchanged, but they can put in a request. So from that standpoint, and a lot of wholesalers are going to want to hold on to their customer base. Alice, let's get into some of the questions that you might have. I want to make sure we get around to each of our panelists before we go exit to the program here. But, Alice, anything that comes to mind that we have not discussed that you have as a result of reading the message boards out there?
Well, no, I think Glenn touched on it. I think a big one that everyone has to – this is a good point that Glenn brought up that I always want to reinforce is that the idea of if I have a plan and it gets out in the market and within week one, week two, the first month, I'm finding it's not fitting – you do have the ability to make changes and make adjustments. I think that part alone, but making sure you document it well, is a big point that I would just like everybody to reinforce. And maybe that takes a little bit of pressure off of what you have to come up with by Friday as you're trying, if you haven't rolled it out to your LOs already.
Yeah, I think it's important. And it's how you roll it out, folks. If you don't have a financial model, I think it's a real problem. You're at a disadvantage. You're at a disadvantage to the person that has taken the time to develop a financial model. Andy Schell and our staff has gone to a great deal of effort to create a model. Email Andy at Aschell, A-S-C-H-E-L-L, at mbs-team.com. We'll get you a copy of it. It's a great effective tool that can help you as you work with it. But loan officers are modeling it out. You need to make sure you have a model. I've been saying for months now that the successful rollout of the LO comp plan is going to have as much to do with leadership and the leaders that are rolling it out as the comp plan itself. A good example is in one particular city, a large competitor in the market called the whole, they held a seminar for everyone in that market, brought them all there and announced their plan, not only to their own staff, but announced it confidently in the whole market. It's a very effective marketing plan. They did it at a particular time where everyone is really trying to roll them out. They came across as a leader in their market, and I encourage you to look at things that you can do to differentiate yourself. Use this as to your advantage. Joe, let's get back to you with any questions that you have that we may not have covered here for your customer base.
Well, I guess for Glenn, I'd say anything new? I mean,
yeah.
20 minutes.
Well,
right?
No, not since we started the program anyway, at least not that I'm aware of. Actually, though, Joe, if you don't mind, there are two things I'd like to share. One is that I think companies are starting to look more carefully at the way that potentially they can justify paying different amounts to the same loan officer or loan originator on different loan types. For example, companies looking more carefully at exactly what has to be done to originate an FHA loan versus a conventional loan, and companies that are sort of setting out a number of additional steps that they expect their loan originators to take when originating an FHA loan that would in turn justify paying a different and higher rate on FHA loans versus conventional. So I think that's an interesting development. I think it's one that has ample support in the regulation. So I think that's a good development. The second thing is that one thing that a lot of people may have overlooked is that come July 21, there are provisions in the Dodd-Frank Act that become effective that impose individual liability on loan originators for violations of either LO comp or steering, and that those individual that individual liability can be as much as three times the fee that the loan originator earns on the loan. So people should keep that in mind, and frankly, management should maybe make reference to that when they're getting pressured by branch managers or loan originators, you know, for to be more aggressive, to get out there on the edge on their comp, and remind them, hey, guys, you now have an individual stake in this, or you will come July 21.
I think one of the questions, there's so many questions coming in about Dodd-Frank and the changes, Glenn, that we can anticipate as a result of Dodd-Frank, the whole CF, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and Elizabeth Warren and her new group of regulators out there. How do you see this as a significant immediate shift, or is it going to be gradual? I think as a summation of some of the questions that are coming into me.
Well, I think with respect to strictly loan originator compensation, that'll be determined by the litigation. If the litigation is successful and the Fed rules are sort of put on hold for an extended period of time, then when the Consumer Bureau comes into existence on July 21, they have their own authority to act, and they'll have to make up their mind, do we want to move ahead with regulations on this right away? And then we'll get the whole regulatory process all over again. We'll have opportunity for comment and everything that goes with it. If, on the other hand, the lawsuit isn't successful, then the Consumer Bureau could say, well, gosh, that issue's been handled. We'll revisit it in a few years. So a lot is riding on these lawsuits.
And we've got coming up, let's be really clear, tomorrow morning, if you give us a quick word for as we go to exiting the program here today. Give us a quick the hearing tomorrow is specifically about what again?
The hearing tomorrow is on the request by the two broker groups for a temporary restraining order that would prevent the rules from going into effect on April 1. That would last for 10 days, and during that 10-day period, they'd have to have a second hearing on a more permanent order called a preliminary injunction that, if it was granted, would prevent the Fed rule from going into effect for a number of months.
So the anticipation, what should we specifically anticipate tomorrow, is not that the whole thing gets thrown out. That's not what we can anticipate happening tomorrow, but it's starting a process that would possibly get us here. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's exactly right. And the start of the process, if it starts tomorrow, would be that the judge says, you know, you've raised enough doubts and there's enough potential for imminent harm that I'm just going to tell the Fed you can't enforce this rule come April 1. We're going to have to think about this.
Glenn, I hate to put you on the spot and ask you. In fact, you could just pass on this question, but so many people are asking. Ask Glenn, what does he think of the probability of success? My message board is loading up. So a lot of people are wondering, as we go to the exit door here on the program, what do you think is the probability of success? You dare put a percentage of success probability of this?
I'd give it 50-50. I think we have on our side, but it's a brand new federal judge, so who knows?
Oh, well, a brand new federal judge on top of that. Folks, we thank you so much for being a part of the Roy Radio program. Glenn, thank you so much for being a part of this program and being such a friend to the radio program, bringing all this critical information at a critical time. Folks, again, go on out to the Community Mortgage Banking Project.com website. Learn more about what Glenn and his team, Pete Mills and the group, is all about. Great group of folks, and I'll tell you, they're drawing in the leaders. You want to learn how to lead? Go there. We look forward to having you be back with us next week, which we're going to be talking about the More about kind of, we're going to go back into LO, kind of observe what took place, but we're also going to be talking about the call report. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.